Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.
Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Just a few days into the new year of 2023, as we were all heading back to work and taking down our Christmas decorations and preparing to get back into the daily grind, word of an absolutely horrific crime began to spread through the media outlets. I can't reveal my source on this, but I was aware of this crime before it hit the media. I received a message about an hour before the news broke that a man in my hometown of Cedar City, Utah, had committed a family annihilation. I had to read the message several times to make sure I was understanding it correctly. I couldn't believe what I was reading. After I read it the third time, I sat on the edge of my bed in silence and didn't move for several minutes. I was totally and completely shocked by the news. There were 8 people dead inside a little house just up the street from my ex-husband's parents' home, a place I spent a lot of time in many years ago. This episode will be part one. As more information becomes available, I will update this story. Today, I'm going to give you as much information as we have at this time. This is the story of Michael Haight, Family Annihilator. Let's get into it. January 4th, 2023. As most of us were going about our day, settling back into our usual routine after the holidays, Michael Haight was in crisis. Michael worked as an insurance agent for Allstate Insurance, and his business was based in Cedar City, Utah, which is the town where I was born and raised. He worked out of this building on Main Street and had for quite a few years. His business has a 4.9 out of 5-star rating with 186 reviews on Google, so it appears that most people were very happy with him as their agent. He has a couple of negative reviews that are quite vicious, and you know how Google is. When somebody's mad, that's the first place they run, right? I tend to believe that most people were satisfied with him as their agent, and from what I've heard, most people liked him. He's 10 years younger than I am, so I didn't go to school with Michael. At this point in time, the details are not clear, at least not to the public. But what we know is that sometime just after Christmas, Michael Haight lost his job. Now, I wish I could give you the details on this, but I simply don't have them at this time. Michael was self-employed, so he couldn't be fired in the traditional sense. But what could happen is that Allstate Insurance perhaps made the decision that they were going to take away his franchise, that they would no longer allow him to be an Allstate agent. Perhaps the state licensing board took his license. Why would this happen? I called my insurance agent to ask them. He said it could be for a number of things, but I was told it would have to be something quite serious. Now, I am not saying that Michael Haight did any of these things, but apparently you can lose your franchise for embezzlement, for mingling client funds with personal funds, and for any type of fraudulent transaction. We don't know the exact date that Michael lost his job, but a friend of mine used him as her insurance agent. As soon as she heard the news, she pulled up her Allstate app, and this is what it looked like. The area she has circled would usually have Michael Haight's name in the box. Now, this was just hours after the shooting, so I kind of doubt that Allstate had time to take his name down in that short time. It's more likely that the information on the Allstate app was changed beforehand, and my friend just hadn't noticed that, but I can't be certain on that. This building, which is where Michael Haight's office was, is owned by Michael's family. Michael Haight's father was a man named Robin, and Robin was a dentist. I did not know Robin, but I have a very close friend who worked for him as a dental assistant for years. This friend of mine will appear in part two of this story. Part two will actually have quite a few people telling what they know about this story and about this case. I will leave the majority of this portion of the story for my friend to tell, but what I will say is that Robin Haight, Michael's father, was incredibly abusive to his sons. This is not a secret. This is one of those small town, everybody knows, but it's nobody's business type things. You know, on this channel, we often talk about why people do the things that they do. For me personally, the psychology behind what makes people kill is the real fascination with true crime. And so finding out that Michael Haight was an abused kid, it matters to me. As you've heard me say in the past, there is never any excuse for violent behavior. If childhood abuse was an excuse for violent behavior as an adult, we'd have millions of serial killers and murderers running around because many people experience childhood abuse. Many people do not go on to kill later in life, but it's the conversation that I find so fascinating. We have to study these people so we can learn about them in hopes that in the future, we might be able to prevent this type of behavior. In 2018, Robin Haight, Michael's father, the dentist, took his own life. He was 66 years old at the time. He'd been a practicing dentist in my hometown for decades, and he built and owned the building where Michael's insurance practice was housed. Michael's brother, a man named Brian, is also a dentist, but Brian apparently had such a strained relationship with his father that he did not practice dentistry with him. I think it's important to note that there was a family history of died, and that there is a history of abuse. And again, we will touch more on that in part two. So we know that the Haight family was experiencing a lot of stress because Michael had recently become unemployed. And from what I understand, the family was being financially supported by Michael's mother-in-law. Before we talk about the events further, let's meet the Haight family. We've already been talking about Michael. Michael was born in 1980. He was 42 years old at the time of this event. He went to Cedar High. This isn't all public information at this time, but I know this information because my youngest sister went to high school with him. My sister remembers Michael as a very nice person, someone who was friends with everyone and who was well known at the school. This is Tasha Haight. Tasha was 40 years old when she was murdered. One glance at Tasha's Facebook page and you see this is a woman who dearly loved her family. Her entire page is photos of her family. The beautiful children are all cleaned up and in coordinated outfits. The girls have bows and the boys have smart, freshly pressed shirts. Tasha obviously took a lot of pride in her babies and loved them very much. And I can see why. They are beautiful kids. On to the children. This is going to be rough. The children ranged in age from 17 to 4. They attended four different schools in Cedar City, a preschool, an elementary school, a middle school, and a high school. So you can imagine just how many other kids are affected by this event. How do you explain to a four-year-old that their friend isn't coming back to school because his dad killed him? You know? I thought long and hard about how to introduce the children, but when I saw that their own family had used their names in the GoFundMe description that they've set up, I knew that they had made the names of the children public, and therefore I felt it was okay for me to use the children's names today. And I hope that we can memorialize them and remember them properly as people and not just as victims. I got a lot of the information I'm sharing about the kids from information provided by the family in the GoFundMe description that was started on their behalf. I will also include a link to that GoFundMe in the description of this video for those of you who would like to donate to the memorial fund that is being established in the children's names. So with that said, I'm gonna get through this the best I can. This is Macy Haight. She loved little children. She loved playing with them and helping them. She was kind and inclusive, and she was excited to graduate from high school this year and would not only be graduating, but would be doing so with an associate's degree because of advanced classes she was taking. She was 17 years old at the time of her murder. This is Briley Haight. Briley was 12 years old. She was a tender-hearted girl who was always thinking of others. She loved music and was always singing, humming, and playing the piano or cello. And she also loved to read. These are the Haight twins, Sienna and Ammon. They were both 7 years old. Sienna loved her friends and she loved school. She was vibrant and energetic and happy. Ammon was obsessed with trains and had been from a young age. He had an analytical mind and he enjoyed finding out how things worked. This is Gavin Haight. He was 4 years old. Gavin was a mama's boy and loved to be right in the middle of whatever was going on. He loved to laugh and he gave the best hugs. This is Gail Earl. Gail was Tosh's mother. She was 78 years old. She is described as an angel on earth. She loved performing acts of service and was often taking care of people even before they knew they needed help. Gail had been staying with the family at the time of this terrible event. The entire family were active members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, more commonly known as the Mormons. They attended church every Sunday and were also active in extracurricular activities held at the church. The family lived here in this beautiful house located in Enoch, Utah. Enoch is a very small town just north of my hometown of Cedar City. It's part of Cedar City in most ways, with the Enoch kids attending Cedar High Schools and most of the Enoch residents working in Cedar City. The towns are connected, and it only takes a couple of minutes to get to Enoch from Cedar City. There are about 7,500 people in Enoch. It is a very tight-knit community. Most people know each other. It's the type of place where you don't lock your doors and you don't worry about crime. A lot of people have horses and goats and chickens. It's a very popular place for young families as the property is a little bit less expensive than in Cedar City. I went to the press conference, and at that press conference, I believe the mayor said that on his cul-de-sac in Enoch, there are around 50 kids living in 7 or 8 houses, so it is very much a family-oriented community. On December 21st, 2022, Tosha Haight filed for divorce. The details of why have not been made public, but as someone who is familiar not only with the area, but with the religion, again, for the sake of transparency, for those of you who might not know, I am an ex-Mormon, and I always reveal that. I think it's only fair. I can tell you that this decision of Tosha's to file for divorce was not taken lightly. I can promise you that the lifestyle the Haights were leading is not one that takes divorce lightly. And whatever drove her to file for divorce, it had been happening for a long time. I have read a post by someone related to the family, I'm not going to say who that is at this time, that claims, this is from Facebook, so take that for what you will, I did follow up as to who this person is, and this person was at one point in the Haight family. This is an ex-member of the family. This person claims there was horrific abuse going on inside the home, that Michael Haight was terribly abusive and Tosha had put up with it for years. I'm going to try to find more information on that. Again, this is an allegation made by someone on Facebook, so take that for what you will. Tosha strikes me as the type of person who would want to keep her family together at all costs, and I'm confident in saying that it took a lot for her to take the step of filing for divorce. We know that Tosha met with her attorney 3 times leading up to the filing of the divorce. Because she filed right before Christmas, there was some delay in processing the filing, and therefore there was a delay in having the papers served upon Michael. Michael was served the divorce papers on December 27th. In the beginning of this event, I was unsure if Michael was aware that Tosha had filed for divorce until he was served, but I have since been told that Tosha's mother, Gail, had been staying in the home since before Christmas. Now, this doesn't mean that Michael knew that Tosha had formally filed for divorce, but it does tell me that Michael was aware how badly things were going in the marriage because his mother-in-law had moved in. I have also been told that Michael was living in the basement of the house, which most likely means the children were aware of the separation and pending divorce. On Tuesday night, that would have been January 3rd, 2023, some of the Haight family members were at the Enoch Church for a church activity. I do not know how many of the family members were at the church at this time, but they attended this church event. There are often extracurricular activities in Mormonism that require you to go to the church on Tuesday, Thursday night, things like that. Wednesday morning, the morning of January 4th, Tosha had an appointment with a friend. When Tosha didn't show up and this friend couldn't reach Tosha, the friend contacted the police and told them she was concerned. This friend knew of the marital situation, and so she was very worried. The Enoch Police Department dispatched officers to the Haight home, where they knocked and got no answer. Feeling there was probable cause, perhaps they saw something, they entered the home. Now, I don't know if they had assistance from a family member or if they broke into the home, if the front door was unlocked, but the police got into the house. There, they found the entire family dead. All seven members of the family had been murdered by Michael. Michael then turned the gun on himself and took his own life. I cannot even begin to wrap my head around what those officers must have seen, around what they must have felt. I don't have any doubt that they are forever changed by what they witnessed. There is no way they couldn't have been affected. And I hope they're taking care of themselves, getting counseling if they need it, talking to someone if they need to, because this is life-changing stuff, and men need mental health support too. Immediately upon the horrific discovery, the area was cordoned off and the forensics unit was dispatched to the scene. The community was absolutely shocked to hear what had happened. I spent the evening on the phone, texting, calling, and consoling people I knew who knew the family. That evening, a friend of mine, a gal I went to high school with, sent me a message on Facebook and informed me that she is the Haights' next-door neighbor. She very generously offered her home to me in order to get some footage of the crime scene, as she knew I would be talking about this story. So thank you very much for your kindness and generosity, Denise. On Thursday morning, I got up early and drove through Cedar City and into Enoch. I let myself into my friend's house and I began to film. Some of you saw the live that I posted from inside the house. My friend then texted me a press release informing me that there would be a press conference held at the Enoch City office building at 11 a.m., and I decided to attend. I sat in the back behind the news station cameras, and I recorded the press conference in its entirety. The Enoch administration did an outstanding job handling the situation. I posted my recording of the press conference, but because I do not have the equipment that the news stations have, the sound is poor. I'd like you to hear some portions of the conference, so I found a better version than mine, and I'm going to share a bit of that with you now.
So yesterday, January 4th, officers from the Enoch City Police Department were summoned to 4923 North Albert Drive in reference to a welfare check. Concerned families and friends had contacted police earlier after not hearing from the people there. Officers entered the residence at approximately 4 p.m. and discovered three adults and five minors deceased inside the home, and each appeared to have sustained gunshot wounds. While this intense investigation is ongoing, investigators currently believe there are no suspects outstanding. Evidence suggests that the suspect took his own life after killing seven others in the home. The suspect is 42-year-old Michael Haight. The two other adults in the home were Haight's wife, Tasha Haight, 40 years of age, and Tasha's mother, 78-year-old Gail Earl. The minors were Haight's children. A 17-year-old female, 12-year-old female, 7-year-old female, 7-year-old male, and a 4-year-old male.
Enoch City is a very close community. Just a few weeks ago, I was mentioning to my wife, as I looked at a Zillow app, that less than 1% of the homes in Enoch City were for sale. It is unfortunate what we're dealing with, but we appreciate both the respect that the media has shown to this point. Seeing some of the reporting, I know that some information has been available through public documents, and I appreciate the respect that the media has shown to the family and the community to this point.
As you heard, the police detailed the events surrounding the murder, obviously with a lot of details left out. I had previously inquired, asked my friends if they knew of any abuse in the home, and several of them said, yes, there were rumors. And then, of course, later I saw that post on Facebook. When a reporter asked the police representative if the police were familiar with the family, if they had been to the house before, the representative kind of hesitated for a moment. Again, this is a very close-knit town where people do not want their business shared openly, and where I'm sure the police try and keep things like police calls private. But after a nod from the city manager, he replied. He said that, yes, the police were familiar with the family and had been to the home. That is all he would say. So that lets us know that there had been requests for police assistance at the house. And that lets us know that there was, in fact, some type of abuse happening at the residence. We do not know this for sure, again, but it seems to be the case at this time.
Yeah, we had been involved in some investigations with the family a couple years prior. At this moment, I'd rather not. But we were familiar with the family, yes.
Was there anything recent, anything that since the divorce papers were filed with their protective order or anything?
Nothing recent that law enforcement was aware of, no.
Under the cover of night, around 4 a.m. on Thursday morning, just hours before I arrived at the scene, all eight bodies were removed from the home. They were all taken to the Utah State Medical Examiner's office for autopsy. Those autopsies were performed on Friday, January 6th. It will be some time before we have the results of those autopsies, but we do know that all of the victims died from gunshot wounds. 2 days ago, Tasha's sister, who lost not only her sister, but her mother, Gail, and her nieces and nephews, made a post on Facebook, which was then picked up by the media. Tasha's sister informed the public that days before the murders, Michael Haight had removed all of the guns from the home. According to Tasha's sister, Tasha was trained with a gun, and she feels that Michael took the guns out of the home so that Tasha would not be able to defend herself. There was then some pro-gun sentiments expressed by this sister, which many people have voiced on Facebook and other platforms that they feel are ill-timed. But we cannot really judge what these family members are going through at this time, nor how we would respond to such an unthinkable tragedy. There is something else. In the GoFundMe started for the family, it says that the funds will be used, of course, for burial and to start a memorial fund in the children's names, but that the money is also needed to cover attorney's fees. Some of those fees would be fees incurred by Tasha for the divorce filing, but at that point in the divorce, so early on, those fees would be quite minimal. I am wondering if perhaps Michael also had legal fees. Perhaps he had legal problems that were tied to the reason he lost his job. Of course, that is speculation. We don't know at this time. But I did find it interesting that they were requesting donations to cover those legal fees. For now, just days after this terrible tragedy, this is what we know. I will be traveling to Cedar City and to Enoch in the coming weeks in order to record interviews with people who knew the family, who know of the situation inside the home, and know of the history. Until then, what I will say is this. There is nothing we can do for Tasha, for her mother, or for those five beautiful kids. But we can do something to prevent this from happening again. My friends, we have got to improve our mental health services in this country. Mental health services are so poorly funded that it makes me angry. Mental health services should be immediately accessible and they should be affordable for everyone. Every town, no matter how big or how small, should have adequate funding for crisis intervention and for immediate mental support staff for those who need help. Beyond that, we must all work to remove the stigma about receiving mental health services, especially for men. Men are expected to suck it up, to be a man, to never cry, never express fear or pain, and it is literally killing us. It is killing the men, and it is killing their partners and their children. You would never tell someone with diabetes that they don't need insulin. You would never tell someone with cancer they don't need treatment. So why do we ignore people with mental illness? Having a mental crisis is no different than being in a car wreck. You might have been fine yesterday, and today you are in desperate need of help. Would we begrudge someone needing treatment after a car wreck? Of course not. So why on earth do we feel differently about someone needing treatment during and after a mental crisis? We have simply got to do better. There is no excuse for what Michael Haight did. None. And in the future, I have a feeling I'm going to end up not liking this man very much. But had he had a place to turn, if he'd had a place to go, a place where he wouldn't feel judged and he wouldn't have to face the people he was talking to at church or in town in a private setting with a counselor, would he have still done this? Maybe. but he might not have. And one thing I do know is that until we work to remove the stigma, especially for men, surrounding mental health treatment, there are going to be more Tashas and Gales, and there are going to be more children. Think of them. Next time you wonder if someone is in danger, don't be afraid to be labeled as nosy. Get involved. Ask people if they're okay. Be the friend that you wish someone had been to you in difficult times. We are, as we have always been, a village, and we need each other. Statistically, the most dangerous time of a woman's life is when she leaves her partner. This is when most domestic murders occur. So especially if you know someone going through a breakup, go that extra mile, reach out, let them know you're there, because my friends, no one is coming to save us. We are all we've got, and we need each other. So please, let's work towards a better way. If you know someone who is struggling with domestic abuse, please step in. Contact the domestic hotline at this number. Let's do what we can to prevent this from happening again. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Like the video if you liked the video, and subscribe to my channel if you'd like to support me. You can also join my Patreon, and for a small donation every month, you will help us reach our goal, which is to donate money to police departments that have cold case DNA in storage that cannot be tested because there is no money to test it. We are working towards making that problem go away. This was a tough episode, and part two will probably be just as tough. I appreciate you caring, and I appreciate you listening. Stay safe, my friends, and be kind to each other. And I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.